You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back, everyone, to 1001 Classic Short Stories and Tales. This is your host, John Hagedorn. Today, a great story from O. Henry called The Marionettes. In this short story, a character named Dr. James lives a double life. A doctor by day, he gains and betrays his patients' confidence to learn where they hide their valuables. By night, he uses his deft hands and tools to break into their houses. And like most of O. Henry's short stories, expect a twist at the end. And now, The Marionettes by O. Henry. The policeman was standing at the corner of 24th Street and a prodigiously dark alley near where the elevated railroad crosses the street. The time was 2 o'clock in the morning, the outlook a stretch of cold, drizzling, unsociable blackness until the dawn. A man, wearing a long overcoat, with his hat tilted down in front, and carrying something in one hand, walked softly but rapidly out of the black alley. The policeman accosted him civilly, but with the assured air that is linked with conscious authority. The hour, the alley's musty reputation, the pedestrian's haste, the burden he carried, these easily combined into the suspicious circumstances that required illumination at the officer's hands. The suspect halted readily and tilted back his hat, exposing, in the flicker of the electric lights, an emotionless, smooth countenance with a rather long nose and steady dark eyes. Thrusting his gloved hand into a side pocket of his overcoat, he drew out a card and handed it to the policeman. Holding it to catch the uncertain light, the officer read the name, Charles Spencer James, M.D. The street and number of the address were of a neighborhood so solid and respectable as to subdue even curiosity. The policeman's downward glance at the article carried in the doctor's hand, a handsome medicine case of black leather with small silver mountings, further endorsed the guarantee of the card. "All right, doctor," said the officer, stepping aside, with an air of bulky affability. "Orders are to be extra careful. Good many burglars and hold-ups lately. Bad night to be out. Not so cold, but clammy." With a formal inclination of his head, and a word or two corroborative of the officer's estimate of the weather, Dr. James continued his somewhat rapid progress. 3 times that night had a patrolman accepted his professional card and the sight of his paragon of a medicine case as vouchers for his honesty of person and purpose. Had any one of those officers seen fit, on the morrow, to test the evidence of that card, he would have found it borne out by the doctor's name on a handsome doorplate, his presence, calm and well-dressed, in his well-equipped office, provided it were not too early. Dr. James being a late riser, and the testimony of the neighborhood to his good citizenship, his devotion to his family, and his success as a practitioner the 2 years he had lived among them. Therefore, it would have much surprised any one of those zealous guardians of the peace could they have taken a peep into that immaculate medicine case. Upon opening it, the first article to be seen would have been an elegant set of the latest conceived tools used by the box man, as the ingenious safe burglar now denominates himself. Specially designed and constructed were the implements, the short but powerful jimmy, the collection of curiously fashioned keys, the blued drills and punches of the finest temper, capable of eating their way into chilled steel as a mouse eats into cheese, and the clamps that fasten like a leech to the polished door of a safe and pull out the combination knob as a dentist extracts a tooth. In a little pouch in the inner side of the medicine case was a 4-ounce vial of nitroglycerin, now half empty. Underneath the tools was a mass of crumpled banknotes and a few handfuls of gold coin, the money, altogether, amounting to $830. To a very limited circle of friends, Dr. James was known as the Swell Greek. Half of the mysterious term was a tribute to his cool and gentlemanlike manners. The other half denoted, in the argot of brotherhood, the leader, the planner, the one who, by the power and prestige of his address and position, secured the information upon which they based their plans and desperate enterprises. Of this elite circle, the other members were Skitzel Morgan and Gum Decker, expert boxmen, and Leopold Pretzfelder, a jeweler downtown, who manipulated the sparklers and other ornaments collected by the working trio. All good and loyal men, as loose-tongued as Memnon and as fickle as the North Star. The night's work had not been considered by the firm to have yielded more than a moderate repayal for their pains. An old-style 2-story side-bolt safe in the dingy office of a very wealthy old-style dry goods firm on a Saturday night should have excreted more than $2,500. But that was all they found, and they had divided it, the three of them, into equal shares upon the spot, as was their custom. 10 or 12,000 was what they expected. But one of the proprietors had proved to be just a trifle too old-style. Just after dark, he had carried home in a shirt-box most of the funds on hand. Dr. James proceeded up 24th Street, which was, to all appearance, depopulated. Even the theatrical folk, who affect this district as a place of residence, were long since abed. The drizzle had accumulated upon the street. Puddles of it among the stones received the fire of the arc lights, and returned it, shattered into myriad liquid spangles. A captious wind, shower-soaked and chilling, coughed from the laryngeal flues between the houses. As the practitioner's foot struck even with the corner of a tall brick residence of more pretension than its fellows, the front door popped open, and a bawling negress clattered down the steps to the pavement. Some medley of words came from her mouth, addressed, like as not, to herself. The recourse of her race when alone and beset by evil. She looked to be one of that old vassal class of the South, voluble, familiar, loyal, irrepressible. Her person pictured it. Large, neat, aproned, kerchiefed. This sudden apparition, spewed from the silent house, reached the bottom of the steps as Dr. James came opposite. Her brain transferring its energies from sound to sight, she ceased her clamor and fixed her pop-eyes on the case the doctor carried. "Bless the Lord!" was the benison the sight drew from her. "Is you a doctor, sir?" "Yes, I am a physician," said Dr. James, pausing. "Then for God's sake come and see Mr. Chandler, sir. He's done had a fit of something. He layin' just like he was dead. Miss Amy sent me to get a doctor. Lord knows what old Cindy had a skeered up one from. If you, sir, hadn't come along, if old Mars knowed 1/10 part of these doings, they'd be shootin' gwine on, sir, pistol shootin', 11 feet marked off on the ground, and everybody a duelin'. And dat po' lamb, Miss Amy." "Lead the way," said Dr. James, setting his foot upon the step. "If you want me as a doctor, as an auditor, I'm not open to engagements." The domestic worker preceded him into the house and up a flight of thickly carpeted stairs. Twice they came to dimly lighted branching hallways. At the second one, the now panting conductress turned down a hall, stopping at a door and opening it. "I done brought the doctor, Miss Amy." Dr. James entered the room and bowed slightly to a young lady standing by the side of a bed. He set his medicine case upon a chair, removed his overcoat, throwing it over the case and the back of the chair, and advanced with quiet self-possession to the bedside. There lay a man, sprawling as he had fallen, a man dressed richly in the prevailing mode, with only his shoe removed, lying relaxed, and as still as the dead. there emanated from Dr. James an aura of calm force and reserve strength that was as manna in the desert to the weak and desolate among his patrons. Always had women, especially, been attracted by something in his sick-room manner. It was not the indulgent suavity of the fashionable healer, but the manner of poise, of sureness, of ability to overcome fate, of deference and protection and devotion. There was an exploring magnetism in his steadfast, luminous brown eyes, a latent authority in the impassive, even priestly, tranquility of his smooth countenance that outwardly fitted him for the part of confidant and consoler. Sometimes, at his first professional visit, women would tell him where they hid their diamonds at night from the burglars. With the ease of much practice, Dr. James's unroving eyes estimated the order and quality of the room's furnishings. The appointments were rich and costly. The same glance had secured cognizance of the lady's appearance. She was small and scarcely past 20. Her face possessed the title to a winsome prettiness, now obscured by, you would say, rather a fixed melancholy than the more violent imprint of a sudden sorrow. Upon her forehead, above one eyebrow, was a livid bruise, suffered, the physician's eye told him, within the past 6 hours. Dr. James's fingers went to the man's wrist. His almost vocal eyes questioned the lady. "I am Mrs. Chandler," she responded, speaking with a plaintive southern slur and intonation. "My husband was taken suddenly ill about 10 minutes before you came. He has had attacks of heart trouble before. Some of them were very bad." His clothed state and the late hour seemed to prompt her to further explanation. "He had been out late, to supper, I believe." Dr. James now turned his attention to his patient. In whichever of his professions he happened to be engaged, he was wont to honor the case or the job with his whole interest. The sick man appeared to be about 30. His countenance bore a look of boldness and dissipation, but was not without a symmetry of feature and the fine lines drawn by a taste and indulgence in humor that gave the redeeming touch. There was an odor of spilled wine about his clothes. The physician laid back his outer garments and then, with a penknife, slit the shirt front from collar to waist. The obstacles cleared, he laid his ear to the heart and listened intently. "Mitral regurgitation," he said softly when he rose. The words ended with the rising inflection of uncertainty. Again he listened long, and this time he said, "Mitral insufficiency," with the accent of assured diagnosis. "Madam," he began, in the reassuring tones that had so often allayed anxiety, "there is a probability." As he slowly turned his head to face the lady, he saw her fall, white and swooning, into the arms of the old negress. "Po' lamb! Has they done killed Aunt Cindy's own blessed child? May the Lord strike with his wrath them what stole her way, what break that angel heart, what left—" "Lift her feet," said Dr. James, assisting to support the drooping form. "Where is her room? She must be put to bed."
"In here, sir."
The woman nodded her kerchiefed head toward a door.
"That's Miss Amy's room."
They carried her in there and laid her on the bed. Her pulse was faint, but regular. She passed from the swoon, without recovering consciousness, into a profound slumber. "She is quite exhausted," said the physician. "Sleep is a good remedy. When she wakes, give her a toddy, with an egg in it, if she can take it. How did she get that bruise upon her forehead?"
"She done got a lick there, sir. The poor lamb fell." "No, sir."
The old woman's racial mutability swept her into a sudden flare of indignation.
"Old Cindy ain't going to lie for that, Debbie. He done it, sir. May the Lord wither the hand what done it. Cindy promised her sweet lamb she ain't going to tell. Miss Amy got hurt, sir, on the head."
Dr. James stepped to a stand where a handsome lamb burned and turned the flame low. "Stay here with your mistress," he ordered, "and keep quiet so she will sleep. If she wakes, give her the toddy. If she grows any weaker, let me know. There is something strange about it."
"Dere's more strange things than that round here," began the negress.
But the physician hushed her in a seldom employed, peremptory, concentrated voice with which he had often allayed hysteria itself. He returned to the other room, closing the door softly behind him. The man on the bed had not moved, but his eyes were open. His lips seemed to form words. Dr. James bent his head to listen. "The money," was what he was whispering. "Can you understand what I say?" asked the doctor, speaking low but distinctly. The head nodded slightly. "I am a physician, sent for by your wife. You are Mr. Chandler, I am told. You are quite ill. You must not excite or distress yourself at all." The patient's eyes seemed to beckon to him. The doctor stooped to catch the same faint words. "The money, the $20,000. "Where is this money? In the bank?" The eyes expressed a negative. "Tell her." The whisper was growing fainter. "The $20,000. Her money." His eyes wandered about the room. "You have placed this money somewhere?" Dr. James's voice was tolling like a siren's to conjure the secret from the man's failing intelligence. "Is it in this room?" He thought he saw a fluttering assent in the dimming eyes. The pulse under his fingers was as fine and small as a silk thread. We'll return with the marionettes right after these sponsor messages.
In 10 days, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble. With exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
And now, back to our story. There arose in Dr. James's brain and heart the instincts of his other profession. Promptly, as he acted in everything, he decided to learn the whereabouts of this money, and at the calculated and certain cost of human life. Drawing from his pocket a little pad of prescription blanks, he scribbled upon one of them a formula suited, according to the best practice, to the needs of the sufferer. Going to the door of the inner room, he softly called the old woman, gave her the prescription, and bade her take it to some drug store and fetch the medicine. When she had gone, muttering to herself, the doctor stepped to the bedside of the lady. She still slept soundly. Her pulse was a little stronger. Her forehead was cool, save where the inflammation of the bruise extended, and a slight moisture covered it. Unless disturbed, she would sleep for hours. He found the key in the door and locked it after him when he returned. Dr. James looked at his watch. He could call half an hour his own, since before that time the old woman could scarcely return from her mission. Then he sought and found water in a pitcher and a glass tumbler. Opening the medicine case, he took out the vial containing the nitroglycerin, the oil, as his brethren of the brace and bit term it. One drop of the faint yellow, thickish liquid he let fall in the tumbler. He took out a silver hypodermic syringe case and screwed the needle into its place. Carefully measuring each modicum of water in the graduated glass barrel of the syringe, he diluted the one drop with nearly half a tumbler of water. 2 hours earlier that night, Dr. James had, with that syringe, injected the undiluted liquid into a hole drilled in the lock of a safe, and had destroyed, with one dull explosion, the machinery that controlled the movement of the bolts. He now purposed, with the same means, to shiver the prime machinery of a human being, to rend its heart, and each shock was for the sake of the money to follow. The same means, but in a different guise. Whereas that was the giant in its rude, primary dynamic strength. But this was the courtier, whose no less deadly arms were concealed by velvet and lace. For the liquid in the tumbler and in the syringe that the physician carefully filled was now a solution of Glonowin, the most powerful heart stimulant known to medical science. 2 ounces had riven the solid door of the iron safe. With 1/50th part of a minim, he was now about to still forever the intricate mechanism of a human life. But not immediately. It was not so intended. First, there would be a quick increase of vitality, a powerful impetus given to every organ and faculty. The heart would respond bravely to the fatal spur. The blood in the veins returned more rapidly to its source. But, as Dr. James well knew, overstimulation in this form of heart disease means death, as sure as by a rifle shot. When the clogged arteries should suffer congestion from the increased flow of blood pumped into them by the power of the burglar's oil, they would rapidly become no thoroughfare, and the fountain of life would cease to flow. The physician bared the chest of the unconscious Chandler. Easily and skillfully he injected, subcutaneously, the contents of the syringe into the muscles of the region over the heart. True to his neat habits in both professions, he next carefully dried his needle and reinserted the fine wire that threaded it when not in use. In 3 minutes, Chandler opened his eyes and spoke, in a voice faint but audible, inquiring who attended upon him. Dr. James again explained his presence there.
"Where is my wife?" asked the patient. "She is asleep, from exhaustion and worry," said the doctor. "I would not awaken her unless—" "It isn't necessary."
Chandler spoke with spaces between his words caused by his short breath that some demon was driving too fast.
"She wouldn't thank you to disturb her on my account."
Dr. James drew a chair to the bedside. Conversation must not be squandered. "A few minutes ago," he began, in the grave, candid tones of his other profession, "you were trying to tell me something regarding some money. I do not seek your confidence, but it is my duty to advise you that anxiety and worry will work against your recovery. If you have any communication to make about this, to relieve your mind about this, $20,000, I think it was the amount you mentioned, you had better do so." Chandler could not turn his head, but he rolled his eyes in the direction of the speaker.
"Did I say where this money is?"
"No," answered the physician. "I only inferred, from your scarcely intelligible words, that you felt a solicitude concerning its safety. If it is in this room—" Dr. James paused. Did he only seem to perceive a flicker of understanding, a gleam of suspicion upon the ironical features of his patient? Had he seemed too eager? Had he said too much? Chandler's next words restored his confidence.
"Well, it should be," he gasped. "But in the safe, now—"
With his eyes, he indicated a corner of the room, where now, for the first time, the doctor perceived a small iron safe, half concealed by the trailing end of a window curtain. Rising, he took the sick man's wrist. His pulse was beating in great throbs, with ominous intervals between.
"Lift your arm," said Dr. James. "You know I can't move, doctor."
The physician stepped swiftly to the hall door, opened it, and listened. All was still. Without further circumvention, he went to the safe and examined it. Of a primitive make and simple design, it afforded little more security than protection against light-fingered servants. To his skill, it was a mere toy, a thing of straw and pasteboard. The money was as good as in his hands. With his clamps, he could draw the knob, punch the tumblers, and open the door in 2 minutes. Perhaps in another way, he might open it in one. Kneeling upon the floor, he laid his ear to the combination plate and slowly turned the knob. As he had surmised, it was locked at only a decom, upon one number. His keen ear caught the faint warning click as the tumbler was disturbed. He used the clue. The handle turned. He swung the door wide open. The interior of the safe was bare. Not even a scrap of paper rested within the hollow iron cube. Dr. James rose to his feet and walked back to the bed. A thick dew had formed upon the dying man's brow, but there was a mocking, grim smile on his lips and in his eyes.
"I never saw it before," he said painfully. "Medicine and burglary wedded. Do you make the combination pay, dear doctor?"
Than that situation afforded, there was never a more rigorous test of Dr. James's greatness. trapped by the diabolic humor of his victim into a position both ridiculous and unsafe. He maintained his dignity as well as his presence of mind. Taking out his watch, he waited for the man to die.
"You were just a shade too anxious about that money. But it never was in any danger from you, dear doctor. It's safe. Perfectly safe. It's all in the hands of the bookmakers. 20,000. Amy's money. I played it at the races. Lost every cent of it. I've been a pretty bad boy, burglar. Excuse me, doctor. But I've been a square sport. I don't think I ever met such an 18-carat rascal as you are, doctor. Excuse me, burglar. In all my rounds. Is it contrary to the ethics of your gang, burglar, to give a victim, excuse me, patient, a drink of water?" Dr. James brought him a drink. He could scarcely swallow it. The reaction from the powerful drug was coming in regular, intensifying waves, but his moribund fancy must have one more greeting fling. "Gambler, drunkard, spendthrift, I've been those. But a doctor, burglar?" The physician indulged himself to but one reply to the other's caustic taunts. Bending low to catch Chandler's fast crystallizing gaze, he pointed to the sleeping lady's door with a gesture so stern and significant that the prostrate man half lifted his head with his remaining strength to see. He saw nothing, but he caught the cold words of the doctor, the last sounds he was to hear. "I never yet struck a woman." It were vain to attempt to con such men. There is no curriculum that can reckon with them in its ken. They are offshoots from the types whereof men say, "He will do this," or "He will do that." We only know that they exist, and that we can observe them, and tell one another of their bare performances, as children watch and speak of the marionettes. Yet it were a droll study in egoism to consider these two, one an assassin and a robber, standing above his victim, the other baser in his offenses. If a lesser lawbreaker, lying, abhorred, in the house of the wife he had persecuted, spoiled, and smitten, one a tiger, the other a dog-wolf, to consider each of them sickening at the foulness of the other, and each flourishing out of the mire of his manifest guilt his own immaculate standard of conduct, if not of honor. The one retort of Dr. James must have struck home to the other's remaining shreds of shame and manhood, for it proved the coup de grace. A deep blush suffused his face, an ignominious rosa mortis. The respiration ceased, and, with scarcely a tremor, Chandler expired. Close following upon his last breath came the negress, bringing the medicine. With a hand gently pressing upon the closed eyelids, Dr. James told her of the end. Not grief, but a hereditary rapprochement with death in the abstract, moved her to a dismal, watery snuffling, accompanied by her usual jeremiad. "Dar now, it's in the law's hands. He aim to judge or the transgressor. He gwine have supporters now. Cindy done paid out the last quarter for this bottle of physic, and it never came to no use."
"Do I understand," asked Dr. James, "that Mrs. Chandler has no money?"
"Money, sir? You know what makes Miss Amy fall down and so weak? Starvation, sir. Nothing to eat at this house but some crumbly crackers in 3 days. That angel sell her finger rings and watch months ago. This fine house, sir, with the red carpets and the shiny bureaus, it's all hired, and the man talking scandalous about the rent. That Debbie, excuse me, Lord, he done in your hands for the judgment. Now he made way with everything."
The physician's silence encouraged her to continue. The history that he gleaned from Cindy's disordered monologue was an old one of illusion, willfulness, disaster, cruelty, and pride. Standing out from the blurred panorama of her gabble were clear little pictures, an ideal home in the far south, a quickly repented marriage, an unhappy season full of wrongs and abuse, and, of late, an inheritance of money that promised deliverance, its seizure and waste by the dog-wolf during a 2 months' absence,
and his return in the midst of a scandalous carouse. Unobtruded, but visible between every line, ran a pure white thread through the smudged warp of the story, the simple, all-enduring, sublime love of the old negress, following her mistress unswervingly through everything to the end. When at last she paused, the physician spoke, asking if the house contained whiskey or liquor of any sort. There was, the old woman informed him, half a bottle of brandy left in the sideboard by the dog Wolf Chandler. "Prepare a toddy as I told you," said Dr. James. "Wake your mistress, have her drink it, and tell her what has happened." Some 10 minutes afterward, Mrs. Chandler appeared, supported by old Cindy's arm. She appeared to be a little stronger since her sleep and the stimulants she had taken. Dr. James had covered, with a sheet, the form upon the bed. The lady turned her mournful eyes once, with a half-frightened look, toward it, and pressed closer to her loyal protector. Her eyes were dry and bright. Sorrow seemed to have done its utmost with her. The font of tears was dried, feeling itself paralyzed. Dr. James was standing near the table, his overcoat donned, his hat and medicine case in his hand. His face was calm and impassive. Practice had inured him to the sight of human suffering. His lambent brown eyes alone expressed a discreet, professional sympathy. He spoke kindly and briefly, stating that, as the hour was late, and assistance, no doubt, difficult to procure, he would himself send the proper persons to attend to the necessary finalities. "One matter, in conclusion," said the doctor, pointing to the safe with the still wide-open door. "Your husband, Mrs. Chandler, toward the end, felt that he could not live, and directed me to open that safe, giving me the number upon which the combination is set. In case you may need to use it, you will remember that the number is 41. Turn several times to the right, then to the left once. Stop at 41. He would not permit me to waken you, though he knew the end was near. In that safe he said he had placed a sum of money, not large, but enough to enable you to carry out his last request. That was that you should return to your old home, and, in after days, when time shall have made it easier, forgive his many sins against you." He pointed to the table, where lay an orderly pile of banknotes, surrounded by two stacks of gold coins. "The money is there, as he described it, $830. I beg to leave my card with you, in case I could be of any service later on." So he had thought of her, and kindly, at the last. So late. And yet the lie fanned into life one last spark of tenderness where she had thought all was turned to ashes and dust. She cried aloud, "Rob! Rob!" She turned, and upon the ready bosom of her true servitor, diluted her grief in relieving tears. It is well to think, also, that in the years to follow, the murderer's falsehood shone like a little star above the grave of love, comforting her and gaining the forgiveness that is good in itself, whether asked for or no. Hushed and soothed upon the dark bosom, like a child, by a crooning, babbling sympathy, at last she raised her head. But the doctor was gone. Thank you for joining us for The Marionettes at 1001 Classic Short Stories and Tales. As most of you know, we bring new stories every Sunday at noon Eastern Time and Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, and lately we've been doing best-ofs, our listener favorites of the 450 or so we've done. Until next time, everyone, this is your host and storyteller, John Hagedorn. Take care, and we'll be back soon with a brand new story.